Okay, this hour we're going to take your phone calls as we talk with Gavin Menzies about a couple of his works, Who Discovered America and The Lost Empire of Atlantis. Welcome back. Gavin Menzies with us. We'll take your phone calls. Gavin, let's talk again about the Chinese admiral then. How many trips do you think he made?
Oh, he more or less, the Chinese admiral, who was called Admiral Zheng, Zheng, he made more or less continuous voyages from China to the West between 1405 and 1424. He was a eunuch. As a young lad, his family came from Yunnan in the southwest of China near the mountains. And in Yunnan, there were Mongols who the Chinese wished to expel. And so a large Chinese army turned up in Yunnan. They captured this young boy, Zheng He, and they castrated him. They cut off his testicles. And he went to serve the future emperor in Beijing. Now, incredibly, which I can never understand, he was very loyal to the person who had ordered his castration. He became an extremely able commander-in-chief of vast fleets.
And they trusted him.
The emperor built nearly 4,000 ships, 2,000 in the sea going, rather than rivers.
Somebody did that to me, I wouldn't want anything to do with them, Gavin.
Exactly. It sounds utterly bizarre. He kept the cut-off bit of his penis and testicles in a little box, which would be reunited with his body when he, in the next world.
Went to the other side, yeah.
In the other side, yes, they had something to look forward to. But he was an amazing man, very, very tolerant. His fleet was multinational, multi-faith, had followers of Islam, Buddhists, Confucians, even Christians on board. So he took this multicultural, multi-religion, the religious fleet all around the world and produced astonishing maps. And he was able to calculate longitude using ephemeris tables. That's books showing the future position of the moon and Venus.
And I assume he was the last good admiral because everything seemed to collapse after that.
You're quite right. What happened was that the emperor greatly overextended himself and China, building this enormous fleet, building the Forbidden City, building the Temple of Heaven, and rebuilding the Great Wall. And all of these projects used up so much wood that China literally ran out of wood to continue. So he sent his generals into Vietnam to pillage the Vietnamese forests. And the Vietnamese had a very skillful general called Le Loi, and he trapped the Chinese armies in the jungle, and they in effect, lost the war. Chinese lost the war to the Vietnamese. So China had her Vietnam crisis 600 years before America had her Vietnam crisis.
Let's take some calls, Gavin. Then I want to talk a little bit more about Atlantis. We'll go first of all to Michael Kent, Washington. Mike. Hey, Michael, go ahead.
Hello, yes. Two questions. I read a few years ago that Columbus eventually died pretty much penniless and by himself. And then another question, some of the early explorers, the Chinese and people from Southeast Asia, were those the source of some of the, what are now the American Indians, the indigenous people of America? Thank you.
All right.
Michael, thank you for those two very interesting questions. Columbus sadly did die penniless. He had a contract before he sailed from Spain for the Americas in 1492. He contracted with the King of Spain, Ferdinand, that he would be viceroy of the Americas on behalf of Spain. So he would, in effect, administer the country. The king was basically told by enemies of Columbus that Columbus had maltreated the native people of America and had stolen a lot of valuable property, which he wasn't entitled to. And so Columbus was recalled, and his family started a lawsuit against the King of Spain, claiming that Columbus was being maligned and he hadn't done these things which he's accused of.
He was 54 when he died, by the way.
Yeah, that's right. And so he the case dragged on and on and on, and it wasn't decided when he died. Now, when he did die, as an aside, I can tell you that amongst his effects was the letter from the Pope's representative sending him a copy of the map showing the way to the Americas. So we know that he actually got that map. Now, the second question you asked was, what was the source of some of the indigenous peoples of the Americas, and was it East Asian? And the answer is yes, resounding yes. DNA has improved to such an extent that it's now possible to say precisely from where a person's forebears came. So in my book, Who Discovered America, Ian and my co-author, Ian Hudson, and I have listed out all the different peoples of South and North America and where their ancestors came from, which for the first time can be done using existing DNA techniques. And it couldn't have been done 10 years ago, 20 years ago, because there just wasn't the capacity to do so. So the advances in DNA have made tremendous advances in our historical knowledge, in that we can trace exactly where a person came from. So if you buy a copy of Who Discovered America, throughout the book there are illustrations of all the different indigenous peoples in the Americas and where their ancestors came from. I hope, Michael, that answers your question.
Didn't the Vikings also get there 400 years before Columbus?
Yes, they did. The Vikings, indeed. What happened was that Sweden and Denmark were united, and they owned what is now Greenland, called Greenland. And in those days, it was a nice, fertile place, but there were no trees. So there were settlements originating from Denmark, created in Greenland. And then every summer, the settlers used to go to sail to North America to get wood for trees and building houses and so on. So there was constant traffic between Greenland and North America. Well, in the late 1420s, the weather changed. Sort of savage ice, mini ice age started. And they found they could no longer graze their sheep on pastures of Greenland. So they, in 1422, the last settler of Greenland returned to Denmark, and that's the end of the Vikings.
What can you tell us about the Tibetan tablet found at Zuni?
I am afraid I can't answer, because we've had, literally in the last few days, a huge amount of evidence about Tibetan linguistics and writing, and I'm afraid I just haven't had time to go through it all, and so
but it's possible, right?
I can't answer, I'm afraid.
Okay, all right, let's take some more calls for you. Bob is in New York, North Tonawanda. Hey, Bob, go ahead.
Tonawanda, that's great. I had a question for you, gentlemen. I had read some of the Mormon things, has there been any evidence discovered talking about the lost tribes, the two lost tribes of Israel that they claim to have traveled to the Americas?
Well, Bob, as I'm sure you know, there is tremendous amount of controversy about the Mormons. I'm not a Mormon. I'm afraid to say I don't know very much about them, which I should know far more than I do. I can say that some very important Mormon scholars, particularly Emeritus Professor John Sorensen, who have collated an enormous bibliography of voyages made from Asia to the New World, that's to the Americas, over the last 7,000 years. And Mormons, without question, have a great deal of evidence on which to base their claims. Whether their claims will turn out to be true, I'm afraid I'm not qualified to say. I think they have very fine scholars, the Mormons, and Mormon universities. But whether, in fact, everything that they claim will eventually be borne out, I don't know.
What kind of technology do you think they had on Atlantis?
Atlantis, they had Atlantis Empire peaked about 2,500 BC. In other words, 4,500 years ago. Now, back then, 4,500 years ago, we know through recent deciphering of Minoan Linear A, their written language, that they had an astonishing array of very advanced equipment. For example, they had a computer which could enable them to calculate longitude at sea by using the phases of the moon and the passage of Venus, the technical name is ephemeris tables. So that they were in mathematics and astronomy and building very, very advanced. Now, in the buildings, the houses were four stories high. They had running water. They had hot and cold water. They had sewage systems. They had windows which allowed opaque light through. And they feasted and produced beer and wine and glorious jewelry and a whole mass of bronze weapons and utensils. Weapons, bronze is very, very hard, and you can make very sharp axes and spears and arrows. And they had an array of those. They had bronze armor to prevent them from attack. And on utensils used in cooking, spoons, forks, knives, ladles, plates, saucepans. They had all of those in copper and in bronze. And they had bronze implements for farming, fishing, hunting.
They had everything. Might they have had flying machines or not?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
But the culture and sophistication of the Minoans, or Atlanteans, if you want to call them that, is being continuously upgraded. Professor Minas Sikritsis and others almost daily come across new discoveries and so on. So nothing would really surprise me to learn about the Minoans, or the peoples of Atlantis, as some like to call them, in the future.
Let's go to Tim in Indianapolis, Indiana, east of the Rockies. Tim, go ahead.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Quick comment and a question. I don't know if you've ever seen there's an island off of Manoa. It's a volcanic island that erupted, and they found two-story buildings in pristine condition with indoor plumbing, in ash. And the volcano that erupted was said to be 10 times bigger than Krakatoa.
Yes.
And my comment, I guess, is I think that a lot of things get buried time goes by, and there's a lot of things that we don't know. The buildings were said to be 5,000 years. They predated Romans and Egyptians. Do you know anything about this?
Yes, that's absolutely right, Tim. Now, the description that you gave is an accurate description, and it was Plato, the famous philosopher and historian, who describes Atlantis, and he describes their way of life. He says they were illiterate people. They had a written language, which, of course, the Minoans did. But they made their money from trading copper, bronze, and tin, which is correct, they did. They were based on islands, which they were, and they got greedy, and they were destroyed by a massive volcanic eruption. And the volcanic eruption, which Plato describes, actually did happen on the island of Santorini, just north of Crete, in 1440 BC. So that's 3,500 years ago. Now, this huge eruption, which was many, many times the size of Krakatoa or any of the eruptions in America, threw up colossal volumes, square kilometers of muck into the air. And this shut out the sunlight, so the crops failed. And it also rained down on, as you say, on Santorini, where the town of Akwetere was buried in 15 feet of ash, just as you say. Now, one of the interesting things that has happened, Tim, as a result of that ash pouring down on Akwetere, the town, the capital of the Minoans in Santorini, the island of Santorini, was that, and by complete chance, an admiral's palace was buried in the ash, and it remained buried in ash for thousands of years until it was excavated in the last century. And when the excavation was carried out to this palace by another incredible piece of good luck, the excavators, the archaeologists, found that the walls of the palace were intact. And on these walls, painted as frescoes, were a fleet of ships returning to harbor in Santorini. So you can see just what ships were like 3,500 years ago, the number of oars, how the sails worked, how the ships were controlled, the size of the ships, and so on. So you have a very, very detailed description of Minoan ships 3,500 years ago. Now, taking things on a bit, this cloud of ash fell also on the Eastern Mediterranean, and especially in the Egyptian Delta. And in my view, in the view of much more distinguished historians than I, that ash was what the Israelites describe in their flight from Egypt back to their Holy Land.
Gavin, how could, you know, those people on the ships, how could they spend so much time on those ships without going crazy?
Well, that's you've asked the right person. I spent months in a submarine and underneath the ice, and you do go just about mad at times.
You do, I know.
So, George, you were a submariner, I think, weren't you?
Well, I was a Navy guy, but no, never was on a submarine like that.
All right.
And not at least on duty. I've been on
a
submarine.
Well, perhaps you could answer the question then.
But you know, you get antsy, you get crazy, and in those days, plus, weren't they all subjected to seasickness?
Well, they made very extensive voyages. They had very sophisticated system of sails, which you can see from the paintings in Santorini, on the town of Akwetere, the Admiral's House paintings, frescoes. So you could say for certain they could sail into the wind. Now, this means that they could progress across the oceans. They could get quite easily from their base in Santorini to southwest Spain.
Hold on for a second, Gavin. We're going to hit our final break, and we'll come back with final phone calls. So if you've got a wireless router in your house and you've got one of those little devices that you can attach to your flat-screen television set to pick up internet, you can simply watch our television show Beyond Belief on your big screen now, and it's on demand. You grab it whenever you want and watch it whenever you want, and there's about 40 past shows, something like that. So take advantage of that, plus hundreds of self-help videos available at your disposal. The great thing is, take advantage of this. It's 10 days free. Just go to beyondbelief.com, beyondbelief.com. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. The Gavin Menzies with us, of course. We'll take your final calls as well. Back to Atlantis for a moment, Gavin. What do you think happened to it?
Well, sorry, George, what happened?
Yeah, where did it go? Boom.
What happened to Atlantis? Well, Atlantis was based on the two islands, Crete and Santorini, which is just north of Crete. And a massive volcano erupted in Santorini. It buried the whole island under 15 meters of ash and created a huge tsunami which raced across the Mediterranean and smashed up all the ports in its path. and it flooded the Nile Delta, ended Nile Delta civilization of the Egyptians, threw huge volume of dust into the air. That dust, when it settled on the rivers, polluted the rivers, turned them red, and all this is accurately described by Plato. It happened in 1444 BC, and it destroyed the Minoan civilization, which was the civilization we call popularly Atlantis.
And this,
Atlantis was Minoan.
This has happened before, hasn't it?
Yes, it has, many times. Now, the interesting thing is Plato, who described so accurately and concisely the destruction of Atlantis or the Minoan civilization, he said, "You Greeks know nothing because your children, in that you have to learn all over again, because civilization after civilization has been destroyed, going back through millennia, and nothing is left after the civilization has been destroyed." So he says that the Minoan or Atlantean civilization, which was destroyed in 1444 BC, that's 3,500 years ago, was but one of many. So you go back and back and back in time, and you find civilization after civilization was very advanced, and it was destroyed by natural catastrophes, which overcame the civilization. So Plato's argument is that we are the children of catastrophe, in that each time civilization rises up and becomes very advanced, it's sure as anything going to be destroyed by cosmic events in due course.
How ironic, but it does happen.
So we are the children of catastrophe, it appears, as much as the children of natural selection, which Darwin said we were.
To the phones we go. Roger, truck driving in Pennsylvania, first-time caller. Rog, welcome to the show.
Hey, George, how you doing tonight?
Okay, Roger, thank you.
Roger.
Great show, as always. I'm a Coast junkie. I had to go out and get Sirius XM 246.
You got us.
So I got tired of trying to find you on the AMs, kept losing you. A little bit of a connection here. I just picked up a load in Fitchburg, Mass. And I'm heading,
that's Mom's Michigan. Hometown. You know that.
Yeah. We have a lot in common. Hey, before I ask Gavin a couple questions, I just, if I can get on the prayer request list for my dad.
Sure. What's his name? What's his first name and what's wrong with him?
Henry. And he's 92 years old. He's a World War II vet.
Okay.
And he's in real bad shape right now.
All right.
a little hard to talk about, but it's
all right. Consider it done.
Okay, thank you. And my question for Gavin, I live in Michigan now, and I've heard a lot about the ore around the world, and it all has a significant DNA, I guess. You can track it all from wherever it came from. And I've read a lot of stuff about how they found ore that was mined from Michigan exclusively in, like, the Egyptian burial grounds and stuff.
Yes.
And also being from New England, I was well aware of the Vikings. There was one of their leaders, I can't offhand think of the name, but he was supposedly killed by in an Indian fight off the coast of either New Hampshire or right up in the Shoals area. And I guess there's documentation of the Vikings in Greenland. They have tablets or something like that.
Yes.
The records of that whole area of, like, Portsmouth, almost to the T, where this battle happened. And I've also heard rumors of inscriptions, Viking inscriptions, found, like, off the coast of New England.
That's true. You know, they came here in the 1100s, didn't they?
Yes, they did. Indeed. Well, Roger, first of all, could you pass on our greetings to your father? What you say is absolutely correct. Now, there's very rich copper mines around the Great Lakes, which you mentioned, and there have been tremendous advances in analyzing from whence copper was, where it was mined from. So, for example, the Great Lakes copper is unique in copper throughout the world in that it has very, very low level of impurities. It's 99.9% pure copper with no arsenic or lead or any of the other impurities that copper elsewhere in the world has. So you can say where if copper or bronze is found, for the sake of argument, in wrecked ships, you can tell where it comes from. And if it is 99.9% pure, then it came, the copper originated in the Great Lakes. Now, the relevance of this is that three ships have been found sunk on the seabed off the coast of Turkey in the eastern Mediterranean. And the wood of the ships has been dated to 1600 BC, one ship, 1300 BC, another, and 1000 BC, the third. So they're very, very old ships. They were the ships that sailed, called the Atlantis ships. Now, in the holds of these ships, there's 15 tons of copper, and it is of 99.9% purity. So in other words, that copper came from the Great Lakes. So here, from these sunken ships, you have evidence that people traded this copper from the Great Lakes to the eastern Mediterranean before they were sunk. Now, on the DNA front, as you rightly say, there's been huge advances in DNA in the last 20 years. So it's possible to tell from whence a person's ancestors came by the DNA. And we can say that the DNA of peoples who lived near Michigan and especially around the Great Lakes have some of them have DNA which originated in eastern Mediterranean, from where these three ships were found. So you can say that people, we can say definitely that the people settled in the Great Lakes area to mine copper 3,500 years ago, long, long before Columbus.
Just amazing what they did and the kind of knowledge and technology they had available.
Yes.
We got to turn you loose on the pyramids, then maybe you can tell us how they got made.
Well,
that's another story.
Yeah.
Let's go to Caleb driving in Kansas. Go ahead, Caleb.
Gentlemen, how are you?
Good.
Fine, Caleb. And you?
Oh, pretty well. Quick question here. It was believed that back when the Knights of the Templar were to be executed, that X amount of ships escaped. Do you have any evidence that those ships did in fact, you know, as rumored, some of them apparently made it to North America? And I wanted to know if you'd ever encountered that in your research.
Well, certainly ships, we can say that advanced ships sailed to the Americas to mine copper 3,500 years ago. Now, how do we know that? Because on an island called Santorini in the Mediterranean, just north of Crete, this island was buried by an massive volcanic eruption in 1444 BC. So 3,500 years ago, this volcano erupted and it buried this island. Now, amongst the houses that were buried was a palace which belonged to an admiral. So we know that this admiral was living in this palace 3,500 years ago. Now, the interesting thing, as far as ships is concerned, is that around the walls of this palace, when they excavated it and took all the muck out from the volcano, they found that this beautiful palace had paintings around four walls of ships. And the ships were very advanced in their design. Now, by the number of sailors, the number of rowers, and the number of sails and so on. You can say they were ocean-going ships, and by the design of their sails, as shown on these frescoes, you can say that they could sail not only with the wind, but they could sail into the wind, which means that they could travel from the Mediterranean to the Americas and back again. Now, if you take those drawings and paintings together with the analysis of the copper found in the ships in the Eastern Mediterranean sitting on the sea floor, you can say you have all the evidence you need that very advanced ships 3,500 years ago, that's 2,000 years before Columbus, were sailing across the Atlantic and collecting copper and taking it back home. So I agree with what you say.
Let's take a few more calls here for you. We'll go to San Antonio, Texas now. Guy's with us. Thanks for calling, Guy.
Yes, I'd like to ask, do you believe that either Tesla or Edison was descendants from Atlantis?
Well, the descendants, yes, the descendants live today around the Great Lakes. If you buy my book, Atlantis, The Lost Empire of Atlantis, you'll see in there a diagram showing where the peoples of Atlantis who have DNA of Minoan people who were the Atlanteans, where it's been found. And it's been found from the Great Lakes across the Atlantic to the Eastern Mediterranean and Crete, Santorini, and so on. So, yes, Guy, you can say for absolute certainty that the people from the Eastern Mediterranean sailed to North America, collected copper, and went back again.
Okay, let us go next. And thanks for that call, Guy. Let's go to Fran in Arizona. Hello, Fran. Go ahead.
That's a walking encyclopedia you have there tonight.
Oh, he sure is.
He doesn't have any trouble with Alzheimer's or dementia. I don't care how old he is.
Well, I wish you were right.
I found a Viking sword handle in northern Minnesota. The horse, I was going back with my grandfather from the field, and the horse stepped on a big peat block of peat that kind of stuck up, and I spotted one corner of the handle sticking up, and of course I was a young, curious person, and I got good eyes, and so I broke off all of the black dirt on it, and I had a Viking sword handle. It was traced back to the professors came from the University of Wisconsin, and wanted to look the place over, and my grandfather, of course, I sat there very obedient-like and never said anything when they asked him where it was found, you know. My grandfather didn't know. I was the one that picked it up, but he didn't want to tell him because it was in a peat bog, see, part where that's the only place where he could get across. My grandpa could get across the field there, see.
Yeah.
And so he took him to the potato patch and rutabaga patch.
Yes.
And so there was six of them came from Wisconsin. He wrote a book. He was a Professor Holland, and he wrote a book about America. It was dated back 1300s, and it was a bronze one. It had a they could tell by the design on it how it was made and everything. But I was pretty excited about it, and of course the nice professor never sent it back.
Oh, well.
Can't blame him, right? He's got a relic there.
Fran, I'm so sorry to hear that. Fran, I'm sure you know there have been huge advances in recent years of analyzing iron, copper, bronze, so on, from which analysis you can get an accurate date through the carbon side of things. And you can get an accurate lead to where the metal was mined from. So if your professor ever does return the sword handle, there are various places, laboratories that we know of, who can analyze the constituents of the sword handle and let you know what it is. So if that happens, let us know, and I'll show you where you can get it analyzed.
Gavin, what about the Japanese? Did they come here a long time ago, too?
Yes, indeed, they did. Now, Professor Betty Meggers, who was very kindly supported our research in a major way. She wrote a very interesting, she was from the Smithsonian. She wrote a very interesting series of articles and books about Japanese of the Jomon dynasty time, who came to northern South America in Ecuador, and they brought a lot of very distinctive pottery with them, which is in can be found in Ecuador today. So yes, she says the Japanese certainly came and settled in northern Ecuador. Now, another one is Nancy Yore Davis, who has written a book on the Union Navajo people. Mm-hmm. And there is another professor who has carried out an analysis of the urine of the people of that the area where the where the people the uni where they come from, and this analysis of this benign deficiency in the urine is absolutely Japanese. So we can say that the people today who live where the Hopi and the Navajo live did come from Korea. Sorry, from Japan.
All right, Gavin, we are out of time. I want to thank you for being on the program. Fascinating research here that you wrote with Ian Hudson, Who Discovered America. His website, of course, linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. I just like these history shows every once in a while. They're really exciting stuff. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesure, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, John P. Wells, and Ian Punnett, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on your next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.